This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconex. Uconex is the premier provider of managed and in-house servicing in the biddable media space. If you're looking for true transparency with paid social, PPC, or programmatic, or are a brand or agency looking into in-housing your team, connect with Uconex. Uconex.com and Tumi. Tumi provides luxury without limits. I've got the bag. I've got the backpack. Thank you, Charlie Cole. If you are a business traveler, there is nothing that lets you roll in style like Tumi. It's in the studio with me today. That's true. And finally, No Kid Hungry. We are incredibly proud to make a contribution to No Kid Hungry in the name of each of our 2019 guests. Stop by NoKidHungry.org today to contribute and help kids to be kids, not be hungry. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the CMO Suite. I'm your host, Sean Halter, and we are recording some of our absolutely last episodes of the season in New York City, and I am incredibly excited about the guest that I have coming up here. Now, I'm not going to lie, I have stalked him for many, many, many a year, and we will talk about that in just a moment. His bio is this. For over two decades, he's been an award-winning, integrated, digital, experienced in advertising, brand marketing, technology, production. There's not a title he probably hasn't had at some point. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about many of those along the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the publisher of At Age, Josh Golden. Josh, how are you?
Thank you, Sean. I'm well, thank you. I'm doing
good. Did
I
botch that bio?
No.
There were so many titles and things.
It's a word salad. I think it needs to, maybe we need to clean that up.
We'll cut that down. I was going to say we'll cut it in post, but we probably actually won't cut it in post.
I think it's exactly, it's a perfect representation. I'm like the Marco Polo of careers. I'm endlessly searching for the next masterful pasta.
The reality is you've done a lot in your time, though. You've had lots of interesting stops along the way. And as I said, we'll talk about that. The reality is also this, as hopefully all of you that listen to the show know, we typically broadcast out of iHeart Radio Studio here in New York City. Josh has been kind enough to actually host us here at Ad Age, and I say thank you.
You're welcome. It's funny because it's ordinarily just sounds beautiful, and as we're, you know, we do all of our four podcasts out of this suite, but now because you have a video asset, it's now we're getting to see the kind of the how just how magical it is for real.
Listen, it's a podcast studio, right? And the reality is we're shooting on video because it gives us content to work from, and I'm sure we'll touch base with that. As we continue the show, content seems to be the key to almost everything these days. Am I correct?
You are correct, sir. Am I your answer, like you call and repeat? I'm ready. Yes. The answer is yes.
Are we going to get call and repeat on this whole show?
I'm incredibly excited.
You've also been kind enough to allow us to utilize one of your show producers, and to thank you again as well. Hopefully,
Max, star producer.
Max, hopefully I won't talk too loud because I'm prone to do so. And so I know, watch the mic levels.
You get excited.
I get excited.
It's good,
because
though.
It's fun, right?
Absolutely.
I think we are all trying to find the fun. As cliche as that sounds, Josh, we are all trying to find the fun in some of this.
If you don't have fun, you shouldn't do it.
Because it's pretty damn chaotic out there right now.
It is hard.
Behind these magical four walls with this amazing lighting and soundproofing and really nice microphones, let's be honest with you.
Not bad. Listen to how good my voice is. By the way, I don't sound like this ordinarily.
Your voice does sound really good. You should walk around with one of these microphones all the time. Every once in a while, I feel like I've got my good DJ voice on, and then I listen to an episode, and I'm like, dang it, I forgot to do my DJ voice in that one. And it's just the same old crappy Sean Halter voice. So let me set the stage for a moment, if I can, which is, I originally met you, I feel like it probably was maybe 4 or 5 years ago now. This is one of my favorite stories to tell people when I tell them that I'm known as sometimes being maybe, some people say aggressive when it comes to just kind of finding people out there in the marketplace. I don't know what word you would use.
I would never say aggressive. I would say
tenacious,
and you have stick-to-itiveness.
Oh, thank you. Stick-to-itiveness. Yes, my grandmother would probably have said that back in the day. Stick-to-itiveness. But we were, I was at probably the first time I had ever been at small agency conference. It was down in Miami, which was absolutely beautiful.
Amazing location.
And then suddenly the skies opened, and as is wont to do sometimes in Florida, a torrential rain came our way, and we were all trying to figure out, oh my God, what in the world are we going to do? Because we, you know, there was some rain planning, but yes.
There was definitely some backup.
And so that being said, everybody kind of rushed inside. People were kind of going up and down.
Everyone was in white.
I do remember some of that as well.
Men and women.
Wearing as, again, you're prone to do in Florida. So that said, you were coming down an elevator. I was with a buddy of mine, and as I am, again, probably want to do sometimes. I'll just talk to anybody sometimes.
I'm a big elevator chatter as well.
And I said, oh, hi. Is this your first time here? And I think you may have literally said, why, yes, it is.
I said yes. I love this comp. I said, I think I may have asked. Did I ask you, like, what'd you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, it's pretty cool. It's my first time. It's Miami. I love Miami.
It's my small little, you know, market research I was doing.
And then I, unbeknownst to me, because I hadn't actually seen your photo.
I wasn't on stage yet until the end.
And you were not in the stage yet. So I was like, so what are you doing here? Who do you work for? And you're like, oh, I work for Ad Age. I was like, oh, that's cool. What do you do for them?
That's my second secret answer. I work for Ad Age is my second answer.
And then you said publisher. And I was like, oh, thank goodness I said I'm actually having a good time, right?
No, you asked for my card at the end. You're like, wait, you're the publisher? I'm like, yeah, but you know. It would have been weird to be like, I'm the publisher of Ad Age, and I hope you're enjoying this.
If I was the publisher of Ad Age, I think that's probably the kind of publisher I'd be. Like, you give me your card first, sir, before I give you mine.
See, mine's worth it.
But you were incredibly kind and gracious, and I...
Well, I'm endlessly interested in discovering what it is that people want from Ad Age, what they're hoping to learn, where we can improve. I am never afraid of hearing hard pieces of information, because I really think it's important to ask, and you have to be. You have to steel yourself for, like, this person might not like it, or might not be digging what's going on.
And we were both so young back then.
Yes,
4 years ago,
many more hair.
When the word programmatic was like, well, what's that? I have no idea.
Newer.
How's that journey been? I mean, I want to talk about obviously you were before that, but reminiscing about that night, maybe to some extent. How has that been? Has it gone faster than you thought that it would? Slower than you thought that it would?
Yeah, no.
Do you remember back actually to that time?
I do remember. I remember
probably
the
because
elevator.
Of the rain. Do you remember the elevator?
my events.
This crazy kid stopping me in the elevator.
We joke endlessly about that particular moment because it was just so dramatic. Went from like perfect, beautiful sun to like bam, rain. I do think the journey has been fabulous as a new publisher, as a person from coming outside of the industry, publishing industry in particular. I was, you know, on the agency side, now I was on the brand side, and I've been on, you know, the network side. I've been in many different places. This role is a great way to connect all of the sort of the history that I've had to make it sort of valuable. My daughter asked me this weekend, she said, Daddy, do you like your job? And I was like...
Did you pause at all?
No,
or you jumped straight in.
I was like, Lila, I got to tell you, my job... I'm enjoying it tremendously because if you can get like three of the five things on one hand saying why you like a particular job, it's really valuable. It's working with people you really like, having an area, an interest that you happen to be sort of passionately interested in, focused on having enough runway to get some room. I want to grow something. I want to make something. I want to impact. Having the opportunity to be visible and have. You know, like a kind of a, it's in a role that's like, I'm very much out, like in this podcast, I'm out there, I'm endlessly talking about Ad Age and how it can help people's careers grow and then also feeding back to me like, well, what else should we be doing? Cause I'm open. And you know, when she asked me the question, I said, I'm not remembering the number five, but all five, I was like, whenever you can fill up a hand for the reasons why you love a job, you work harder at it cause it's really worth it.
And you had probably more. Or you could have gone too.
Yeah, I could. I like threes and five odd numbers.
Threes and fives, odd numbers.
It's always better to have.
They always
something that
they
is.
They always
something.
Fill the conversation out, right?
Like, let me tell you, it's three reasons. Boom.
Boom. Boom. Boom. So you talked a little bit about your daughter, and you talked about the fact that you had some other jobs prior to getting here. So where did you grow up? Did you grow up on the West Coast?
No, I was East Coaster. Okay. I grew up. I grew up in cities that all sound like locations. I grew up. My first place I was born was called Closter, New Jersey, which is.
Is it close to New Jersey?
It's semi-accurate. Yes, it's in New Jersey, but it's close. It's right next to all the cool places.
That's hilarious.
And then I moved to Easton, Pennsylvania, because my father was the head of marketing for Crayola Crayons.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I was like I was one of three Jews in Pennsylvania. That's how it works.
But you had all the crayons.
And I was like, hey, I got the crayons.
So
come over
you're
my
probably
house.
Incredibly popular, right?
Come on over to my house. After that, I went to film school in Ithaca, and then I went out west to go explore film, which I found out when I was the head PA from the John Tesh and Lisa Gibbons show from Hollywood. It was definitely less than what film school had promised because I wasn't directing.
Did this theme song come over like every night? Did you?
Yes. Just to be clear, that theme song was the moment that I would be like, oh, finally they're done. Thank God. Now I can take the tapes and run it over to Burbank. And it was like 9:30 every night. And
that was the job.
That was I'll be honest. The first job I had was a recycling job inside of Paramount Pictures. And I tell that to my kids, both Eli and Lila. They're like, so what was your first job? I'm like, I was a garbage man.
Really?
Garbage man, 100%. I was like, hey, Mr. Jones, how are you? I'm going to clean this. Is it good enough? Oh, you recycle them in. Oh, you know what? You missed the thing. This is plastic and this is paper. Okay, here we go. Got it. And they've quickly moved me out of that job to be like, why don't you go and be a PA on a show? I just really liked cleaning the garbages.
They sent you over there. They sent you over to Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah.
So let's go back to Crayola for just a second. Sure. So your dad worked for Crayola. So you're...
Actually, it was Binney and Smith at the time that owned Crayola. I'm just letting you know, just a little accuracy. It's your podcast, so I want to be careful.
It was called Binney and
Smith. Binney and Smith was the name of the company that owned Crayola crayons.
And were they based in Pennsylvania?
They were.
You guys were there?
They were. That's where the Crayola factory is as of today.
And so did you literally just have like every color crayon there
yes,
is imaginable?
I did.
My wife worked for Lego for a little while. And so like, I didn't have to be that nice to my kids' friends because she had all of these Legos.
Every Lego possible.
Every Lego possible. And we didn't know it until she got the job. But when you trade out the big displays for Lego, they're all glued together. You can't take the Legos apart. So our kids would bring – we'd have the displays because you're supposed to throw them away. And she threw all of them away, of course. But they'd have these cool displays, and their friends would try to take them apart, and you can't. They're all glued together. So you had all the Crayola every color possible.
And then he moved into managing the paint division, Liquitex, which I then repaint if possible. So I was definitely – I made a lot of paintings as a child.
What did your mom do?
My mom was head of marketing for AT&T. She actually was a computer science major and graduated in 1968. So she was the computer science mathematician, PhD in math. My father went to music school and had his master's in music.
And they both end up in marketing somehow.
Well, actually, he was more of an entrepreneur, a creator of he ended up in marketing. And then now more recently has evolved into innovation and creating a lot of different products for big box stores, CVS's and the world, creating poster products. And my mom is now working and supporting that business. So both of them. And now my sister has joined that business as well. So I am I'm the outlier. I'm the person who has not yet joined the business.
Did they ask you to join along the way?
Okay, they did.
We could go down that road.
It was nice. I just really liked what I was doing. I always enjoyed what I was doing.
You know, I did a podcast out of California earlier this year. Really a great opportunity to kind of talk to some people out on the West Coast. And the gentleman that I was interviewing was talking about his dad and his family and kind of started tearing up a little bit. And I immediately just kind of changed the subject a little bit. I kind of felt bad. I don't want somebody to cry. This is a marketing podcast. It's not, you know, Days of Our Lives.
Your life, right.
But I sent it to Brian here and Brian.
Breaker.
And what's he's editor, right?
Yes, he's the editor.
And he says to me, Halter, you buried the lead. I was like, but Brian, he was going to cry. He's like, no, you want him to cry. I'm like, it's marketing.
Get crying. It's part
He's
of
like,
the deal.
Come bring some tears. I don't think I'll see any today. But,
no. You never know. I'm on the edge.
Apparently, Brian will be very disappointed.
I should try.
That's why I try to go down that road of like, well, maybe you were not invited to be part of the family business.
It's a good
Is
business.
There scandal that we don't
no,
know about?
I wish there were. No, it's all wonderful. They do a great job of business, and I do get to help out now and then.
So you have a sister that works for them now.
Yes.
Any other family?
That's it.
Brother and sister. Older, younger?
She's older from 3.5 years.
So you're the baby.
I am the child, the youngest baby.
Do you feel like you're kind of a mama's boy a little bit as the baby?
It's funny. I don't know whether I associate
Is it funny or peculiar? I don't know.
No, I'm just trying to decide. Like, would I be I'm sure when I was very young, I'm sure I was really, you know, into my mom.
Yeah.
As you grow, I feel this about my children. Like, there were times when my daughter was very much into me, and then my son was less, and now it switches around, I think,
and
as
you have
grow.
A son and a daughter as well?
Both, yes.
Same thing, daughter older and son younger?
No, my son is older.
Okay.
And it's that's the way it came out.
And it's funny, though, as our kids get older, and now, again, talking about your mom and your dad and your sister working there, but you're right. You know, your kids are one kind of way when they're kids, and then as they start to get older and they mature and they change, you know, my son has been so much like my wife's side of the family. My My daughter was a lot like me, but as they get older, they really kind of become, I guess, themselves, and they kind of almost switch roles to some extent a little
bit. Yeah, I think that's interesting to think about the evolution. I don't think they could ever, my parents could have ever like said, he's going to be in marketing because I was an actor in high school and then I did film and, you could never make that path. But I do, I like to think about what my children would potentially be. I have no idea though. Zero.
So was your grandfather in marketing to some point as well? They were the kind of first really generation because of where they'd started from, and they just ended up kind of falling into that a little bit. But you could be third generation, which would be kind of interesting. We interviewed a guy earlier this year, and he was like fourth generation. I was like, wow. And he's like, there's really only been five generations in marketing. I guess you could go back.
Oh, yeah. I guess you're right.
You know, he was kind of talking about the fact of advertising. Beginning of advertising.
Huh.
So it's interesting.
That's a new thought. Like how many generations of car manufacturing could also go similarly back to,
can't go back much further than the Edsel, right? Yeah.
It's very, very clever.
It kind of also, I think, maybe makes you realize how small this business is to some extent.
That
is
why I think you just put your finger on it for this little moment here, why this industry is so, so teeny tiny that everyone, it's only so many people that are in this industry, only so many brands and agencies that it does require a certain amount of, well, there's only so many people that can fit in the seats, almost like the seat where the music stops, the case, the music,
pull the musical
seat chairs. Musical chairs, thank you very much. I had it.
It was right there. I pulled it straight out, though.
Musical chairs, yes.
It is also surprising, I think, to your point, how small this industry is, how connected it really is. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty, like every industry, some people come into it and then they kind of wash out of it or they decide they want to do something completely different. But there's a core group, kind of, to some extent, especially in this city. Everybody knows each other.
It's a very connected group. I find it to be, it's empowering because if you have something really important, like really, really important, you're passionate about, and you, and it's not business-based, it's personal-based, you can rely on just about anybody who's in the industry to be like, yep, I'm in that.
And don't you also feel like maybe to some extent that if you're also maybe a little honest with them and you're open about what your intentions are, that they're much more likely to
totally.
Yeah.
When I was asked to be a part of the Gun Safety Alliance, which is really important to me from having children and recognizing how much this country needs that change to happen. Past Friday, we were asked by the Gun Safety Alliance, the core team, Carolyn Everson and Stephen Wolf Pereira and Kristen Lemkow and Shelley Palmer, that core group, that they asked us to pull together a hackathon, which we did last year.
Okay.
And we were going to do it again this year. And I quickly called Neil Whaler from Whaler. I said, would you give us your space? And in three seconds, he was like, absolutely, I'm on it. Because it's not a business thing. It's a totally, it's a good for the world thing. And we just, in 5 minutes, it's that fast. It was that fast. And now, I mean, it's basically impossible for me. I'm totally like just jammed in Cannes, and suddenly I was just able to make an hour and a half of space, and everyone is going to, for sure. It's going to be a 50 person event maybe, and it's only the 50 people that really, really care about this, and they are going to be there and be mentally available for it, and then it creates a year's worth of work effectively, which is great.
And so it's nice to be at a point in your life also where you're able to provide that, that you have some connections through equity you've built yourself, obviously, through honesty, through taking this product where you work at and putting your stamp on what's happening out there in the marketplace. And in doing so, you've got more people that are probably willing to say yes to you.
Yes, 100%. And I think that...
No expectation really of anything in return.
Nothing.
Which is the beauty of it.
I really try to to be as honest and as open with anyone that I can possibly be regarding, hey, listen, this is a thing. I'm interested in doing it. I just came up with an idea for myself recently, and I've been talking to people about it, and they give me their honest feedback, and it's really helpful.
What's that? Nothing you can share here?
No, of course I can share it. It's a concept. I've endlessly been interested in the moment of innovation when someone comes up with an idea.
Is it because of your dad? You feel like he's always
a little. My father's always been an inventor, and that's always inspired me to invent my. I mean, he's 50, 60 products that have always been successful. Now my sister doing it as well, endlessly creating whole other units that have nothing to do with art, and now just sort of into like, hey, here's a weight lifting,
right?
Because they can make it. because they have, you know, they have a whole company in China that they connect with. Anyway, the point is, I am endlessly creating and innovating about what it is that this industry needs to be inspired by and understand. Mm-hmm. And so we do that a lot within Ad Age. And then I came up with this. I've called it I'm pitching it to you here, Sean.
I'm listening.
Get ready. It's called Eureka.
Okay.
Now, of course, I think the Eureka vacuum and other Eurekas, but they're all from the same Greek root, which is that sort of that moment of realization, the aha moment. And consider Lin-Manuel Miranda, for example. There was a moment when he was reading the Ron Chernow, autobiography about
Hamilton. Listen, I still mix up fiction and nonfiction. You could say anything.
I skirt and dress. Yes. I still can't get. I'm very horrible at that one. So he's reading it, and he thinks he's in page 621. He's like, wait a second. Can I make a musical about this? I want to know about that moment. I want to have him explore that moment with me and share with me how did you connect those dots? What made you go from reading this book to thinking about a musical? And how did you get to what you got to? And then, while I love the innovation part of that, I want to know when he recognized he actually had something. There was I endlessly throw ideas against the wall, like
all the time.
Totally failed.
Yeah.
Amazing failure. Horrible. But there's every once in a while I know, like, oh, that's going to work. And I like to, if I could string together all of them, you know, say I did 50 of these interviews and I can string together all of them one by one, I can start to see
is
there a narrative between from chefs to poets to musicians to creative, agencies in their, their best teams. When they came up with the Kaepernick campaign, I want to find out. When did you actually connect those dots?
Do you think you'd see consistency? Do you think that you would see that there is a pattern? Because
my head of marketing, Heidi Waldusky, asked me this. She's like, what's your hypothesis? And I was like, God, I'd like to think that there is some, there in the initial innovation moment, there's a lot of, I came up with these ideas and I just like to know that moments. But when the tipping point is reached, I think there's going to be something it's probably a business, in output that's like, oh my God, this is going to work. But it could be also just like, I feel it in my chest when I saw this thing go up and I saw the curtain rise and I heard the first note, I just knew it. And I don't know. But the truth is that
moment,
story, that thing, I believe is extraordinarily effective for marketers to know. And I'd like to, and I'm going to explore it.
It's a great idea. And look, there you go. You already have
one
really amazing idea. Now more of us will know about it, which is awesome. To that point,
I need a lot of people to come to me. It's like, I want to do this one with you. So
I think they will,
challenge.
Because I feel like that's a moment all of us have those moments in our life, whether it's that you've created this amazing play or that you decided to do something different.
Yeah.
I'll talk about myself for just a second.
I'd like to hear that, Sean.
So let's talk about this podcast for a minute, right? So I've been banging on the Ad Age door since the moment we were in that elevator, like, let's do something, guys, right? Now, I don't have all of those New York connections. I didn't grow up here. I don't live here. I live in Florida with all of the other old retired people.
But they all look really healthy.
They all look amazing. I think at some point you have that moment where you just say, you know what, I'm not going to rely upon anybody else to do this thing, whatever this idea is.
I'm just going to do it.
I'm just going to do it and see what the hell happens from it. And so that's what I did last year. I just said, I'm going to do this podcast. I'm going to try to do it differently than the ones I hear out there that most agencies have, because all they do is talk about themselves, which I just kind of did here.
Just a teeny bit, but most of it's about me, so it's okay.
But most of them talk also just to their clients, and it feels pitchy and salesy. Mm. And so I think I felt like if I could do it more like an Ad Age type thing, and if I could steal some stuff from what Brian was doing out there, but give it a different perspective. And to your point, you use all of these parts of every stop along your way, the agency space that you were in, the CMO positions that you've been in, to now utilize all those parts to become the publisher that you are now. You almost had to have those stops along the way, and you've had your aha moments probably happen constantly because you're here.
But I think you're absolutely right. And also, I gotta say, I'm really proud of that you did this. You called me, you told me it was the thing. I thought, this is great. And the one thing that I believe you cannot train is passion.
Well, yeah, that word was, because as you were telling that story about Lynn, that was the thing that I thought, maybe that's a thing that that is one of those threads, is you have to have enough passion for it that you're willing to fail.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to just throw it out there. And I think maybe that's the thread. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I have three or four that are in the can or that are going to be in
the
can.
Oh, you've already done some?
No, they're lined
Ish.
Up.
Okay.
And for to me to do them. And my the whole video staff is like, do you know what you're doing? I'm like, I really don't know at all.
But that's the beauty of it.
But I'm a good conversationalist. I can probably pull it off. And I'm hopeful. Max is here looking at me, just, you know, slightly judging.
We'll know if Max is here 6 months from now, whether you were able to pull this off or not, Josh. Right?
It's true. I really do like the idea.
Even just the process is enlightening to yourself. Let's say that you did three or four of them and you decided it didn't go exactly the way that you wanted or the guests, because you never know when somebody gets in, you think that they'll be maybe a great guest, and then they kind of get in, they go, I don't know, Josh, how am I supposed to know? My landlord came up with the idea, and my uncle loaned me the money, right? And so I went with it.
But, you know, I guess that's the moment of innovation, the kind of the spark.
Yeah.
And then the knowing that I think what marketers really, and agency folks alike, need to know is sometimes you miss that sign that this is going to work. And if I can string enough of them together and say, like, here's the seven things, by the way, that are the signs. It might be helpful for
there's probably a book universe in there at some point as well. You know,
I think it could be. I'm not a prolific writer.
I think they'll take excerpts and they'll put them in, I don't know, Ad Age or something like that.
I would hope. Only if I were lucky. I like this idea, and I think that it's an area specifically for creatives that we really need to be in touch with. How do you most successfully connect that moment and that spark with an output, and then know that in fact you're right. Innovation is culture. You know, advertising and marketing is really just creating culture. And if you can connect culture and that, you know, that moment of inspiration and have it be something really valuable, it would be great. Also, on its own, I'm passionate about it.
Yeah.
I love ideas. I love when someone comes up with an idea like, God damn, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I get inspired by someone else's.
I get angry sometimes.
Which I did that one.
I swear, before I even started this agency thing, literally 12 years ago, I was like, I wish they made little cups of ketchup like they do all this other stuff. I'm not lying. I swear to God, I went home to my wife. I was like, I'm either going to do this agency thing or I'm going to do this ketchup and cups thing. She was from Pittsburgh. I was like, I'm sure I could call Kraft Heinz about
100%.
Nothing happens with that. And then, you know, 4 years later, you're Chick-fil-A and here's the ketchup in a cup. And you're like, that was my idea.
I did that. That was me.
Or like the bucket with the hand, like the paint bucket with the handle on it. Have you seen those?
Yes, that actually, where it's in it. You're holding the handle.
Yeah, you're holding the handle. You're like, well, who thought of that?
That was a smart one. My wife
suitcases on wheels. Come on.
She invented
suitcases on wheels.
Roller blades that you'd slap to your shoes. This is what she said. This is her thing. She invented it in the mid-90s. I was with her. I can say definitively that she did invent it.
That's so funny.
And now it's a thing. And she's like, I invented it. I'm like, yeah, but that's the next step. She actually went to a lawyer and got it so she could get it patented.
I bet there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those that are out there, right? So we all probably have that.
As my father says, it's a good one. My father says, ideas are the easy part.
It's the execution.
They're like, yeah, everyone has an idea.
And having the passion.
Yep.
But you can tell sometimes, even as you're talking about the normal stuff that you're doing, which is all important, it's your day job, it's incredibly important, you're doing good work, you take this brief moment and you kind of talk about this other part of what you're doing and you light up. And I think, you know, you can't see that unless you're watching the video part of this, but—
It's awesome video, by the way.
That's sometimes, thank you. That's sometimes, I think, when you also know that maybe there's something there, even if you fail.
Yeah. Highly likely that it will fail, but I'm going to risk it.
Can't fail.
I'm going to risk it.
It can't fail because it's content, and content is everything these days.
I'm just prepared to fail. Like, it might suck, but I'm not going to let it.
Yeah. And if you have good guests.
Yes. It'll be at least interesting.
They'll do the heaviest lifting.
Yes.
And that's the best part. Let's talk about your time here. It's been about 4 years now since you've been here. Is that right?
Actually, I think Monday is my 3-year anniversary. We should celebrate this. My 3-year. This is why I'm doing a podcast.
Happy 3-year anniversary. And you had to almost spend it with me.
No. Hey, listen, I'll take it.
What's changed the most, you feel like, in the 3 years that you've been here?
I think when I joined, it felt a lot of separation.
Did Crane own it back then
as
well?
Yes, Crane is on for 90 years in 2020. So they've owned it from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think it was definitely, it was very siloed. I think that was a big change that we made, to have all teams much more unified and working together. I think it's really important. While I always respect the editorial integrity, it's actually one of the biggest things that's important for my job, that having, you know, edit and events and marketing and sales be aware of what's happening together, it creates a nice synergy where like, oh, isn't that a thing we mentioned? And it can start to work together much more successfully if it's all like this event and this and that. That's just, we just don't do things with other team members. Not that it was as dramatic as that, but it definitely, that was certainly a major shift. And also, just now it's 3 years, I can say this, is that the momentum is faster and bigger and more visible. When we did, after the rebrand that I did with Heidi, within the first year, it's funny, I suggested to the Cranes, the leadership, I was like,
isn't an actual family, the Crane family?
The Crane family. I said, Marantz, Mr. Crane, I pushed it.
We should all call him Mr. Crane, though, right?
I always
yes.
do.
Okay, Mr. Crane.
Mr. Crane, I'd like to suggest something to you. And it was advertising age when I joined. And I folded a piece of paper and I slid it across the table to him at lunch. And I said, do you think you could handle this? And he's like, is this money? I'm like, no, it is not.
Because I can handle money, kid.
It's not money. And he opened it. And he's like, at age? He's like, yeah. And I said, but I want to actually change the framing and have that be known as a different entity. I said, that's what everyone calls it. I'm like, right, that's what everyone calls it. Let's just go with what we call it and then signal to the industry that we're changing. This is a year, this is 2.5 years ago. And so from that moment on, this enormous momentum has happened. And now we're at this pre-can, moment where we're going in with like 5 events and, you know, the event that I do, which is, you know, Hot Seat Interviews, it's going to be busy. And I'm just so excited because of the amount of the speed of the flywheel that takes time to get going. The speed of the flywheel is definitely moving and I can feel it palpably. And I'm so excited about it.
Is it scary?
Always. I think I always consider myself, I'm not a great skier, but I do know the analogy of being over my skis a little bit. And I try to, in everything that I do from a business perspective, be aggressive. Because if you're just like, I'm sure it'll be fine, you'll lose. Someone else will want it more. So I want to be the person who wants it more. And I do.
The space is an interesting space. Media companies are becoming agencies to some extent. Agencies are becoming media companies. It's becoming a very blend world. As marketers are trying to figure out where their dollars go and how to stretch the dollars and how to really stay in front of consumers. You guys have to report on that, obviously, to some
Absolutely.
Extent. But you're also part of the process to
extent. It's a very meta. We're a meta
it
company. We're
meta.
In publishing and we're about publishing. So it is certainly a challenging environment for the publishing industry. But we're also writing about the changes in the publishing industry. So it ends up being we're in it, but we're about it.
And how do you, outside of the typical keeping the separation between church and state, how do you do that today? When you've got a brand who's coming to you or you're interviewing them or you're talking to them and you realize, geez, these guys just need a little help with this.
Right.
How do you do that?
Well, on the business side, it's for me, it's because I'm the agency guy forever.
Yep.
And on the sales, people know how to do this as well, of course. And all our content studio, it is listening to the client need, of course, and understanding like what thing would give you the answer to help your business grow. And that's what I've been doing forever.
Yeah.
That's my thing. And I loved...
In essence, kind of that solve, don't sell mentality of like, always. What are you trying to solve?
Just, yeah. I'm listening to you. And it sounds like what you really need is, 200 people in a room to talk to, or you need 200 leads to sell to, or whatever it happens to be. Or you need some visibility. Like, no one even knows that you exist.
Can you say that?
Of course. But because the truth is, there as a marketer... And anyone or as a CEO coming to me, they generally already know their problem because they're much more familiar with their business. But as a focus group of one listening to their business, I'm like, funny, I didn't even know Connectivity Holdings until you actually, that's Sean's business.
You didn't need to drop that name, but thank you. Yes.
But I didn't know until we had a direct conversation. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Let me find out about, let me take one step into your business and understand it.
You are very inquisitive.
Yeah, I just like...
Just by nature.
I do love to ask questions.
And I think the thing that I've always found interesting about you is that you, not only are you inquisitive, but you listen. That doesn't always happen. Somebody will often say like, oh, well, how's so-and-so? Or what are you doing with this? But they have a point or an agenda and they're trying to figure out how to race to get that. But I've always found you to be not only inquisitive, but genuinely listening.
I was trying desperately to come up with a good joke at the end of this, but
it's probably best not to.
No, I like to hear what, frankly, I've learned everything that I've learned by listening. I was a very bad listener, I would say, through at least
horrible
my, like, mid-30s. I was like, ah, I got it all. I'm brilliant. And, you know, my being lucky enough to have a wife who has been with me since 21, she delicately shoved me in directions to be better at certain things. So one thing I really did learn how to be is like, well, you know what? Let me just listen before I jump in with my big freaking idea that's going to solve all the problems. Because sometimes I'm wrong. And I'm always willing to I don't have an idea. Just pocket it for a second and just listen. And maybe sometimes I do actually say that thought, but realistically it changes because I'm actually listening to someone's. What's your need? What are you trying to do? So that's the business side, and that is, you know, it's a pleasure to have a client who says, it's funny. I tend to work with people like Sean. I know that people, not everyone knows you, but you're
this is ridiculous.
Wonderfully yes. nice guy.
Not just really.
It's true.
Only when I see you.
No, but
because
right?
I'm still holding out to speak at one of the upcoming events. For every Ad Age event I go to, I'm like, you know, they're a decent speaker, but I'm a really good moderator.
You are. And if,
one
if
of these
I
days, can, Josh.
If I controlled who
Church
would
and state,
speak,
blah,
I just
blah,
would
blah.
Let you.
Yes. But to your point, you're always a good listener.
Being a good listener because it allows me to. Well, it allows me to, if I like the person that I'm working with, it makes it really easy because, like, I want to help you.
Yeah.
So I tend to try to work with people I really like. And that creates a nice microcosm of individuals that we all kind of get along.
Who listens to you? Who do you go to when you're stuck with something, you know, and you're trying to figure it out? Who helps solve
the whole
your problems?
Depending upon, of course, internally for the team. A lot of times, believe it or not, a lot of times that's my wife. She is a fabulous listener, and she is... if anything, my executive editor forever, don't say that or say this, but she's been fabulous and a wonderful influence for me and of course my children and my whole life. But, you know, from a business perspective, Brian is, you know, I pitched him Eureka and he made some subtle suggestions that were meaningful, but like, because he liked the idea already, but he goosed it, you know, here or there because I'm open. Like, okay, is this good? Would you let this grow as an idea? And then Heidi, my head of marketing, Heidi Waldeski, also, you know, amazing in the suggestions she can make. But that's the people who tend to are forced effectively to listen to me. But I'm always at least kind in the way that I ask.
It's nice that over those 3 years, though, that you've gotten to know them. And I don't know how long has Heidi been?
Heidi's been with me. Well, actually, technically, it's 10 years because I worked with her through three jobs.
Oh, that's funny.
So she comes
with you along the way sometimes.
Not always.
Not like that,
I try not to. But realistically, if I think that she'd make a great fit, I try to find a place. You know, Tina Marcosello was the head of my events. I'm lucky she was here when I got here. I got so lucky that she is here. And that's Kevin Skaggs, who runs all of my technology. He is like my product guy. And he's the most calm technology human being on the planet. So I don't know how he stays so calm about work. And you know, the edit staff is brilliant. I mean, I mentioned to him all the edit products that we make that I developed. One is called In the Hot Seat, which is an interview series, which I do because I've got this problem. People call me like, hey, can I get into the magazine? And I'm like, God, I wish you could. They didn't. Did you pitch it? And like, no, it didn't happen. I'll tell you what. I'll sit down with you. Totally easy. You and I. Just let's chat. So we would chat and we'd made a piece of video out of it. And it was
good
wonderful.
Piece of content.
Good piece of content. Now, 65 of them later, it's a show. You know, and it works and it's effective and it gets the job done for the marketer and it meets our business need and it works. It fits.
And everybody needs content these days.
Everybody. They really do.
I think that's probably one of the most interesting things. When I came to put a little bit of a button on this piece of it, and then we've got a few more minutes of your time if you don't mind. When I came to you and Brian, I wanted to circle back to Brian for a second. How long has he been with you?
He's been here 2 years and change, I believe. Just 2 years and like maybe 2.25 years.
So it's nice that he's formed enough equity with you that he feels confident and comfortable enough to give you a critique to some extent.
Totally.
And you need a couple of those. And it seems like normally his critiques are spot on. Again, other than him telling me, you know, go for the tears. you buried the lead, Halter. I tell that story all the time. But that came from him, and it actually came from a point of editorially looking at something that he had no need to do other than me asking him if he would do me a kind favor and just listen.
Listen to it, yeah.
And knowing then that he did that, which was also kind and didn't need to, and then gave me actual real world advice. There's a lot of people that wouldn't do that. They'd say, podcast is great. Oh, I heard that guest. They were so good. But he gave me a critique that was actionable. You know,
he listens with different ears, I believe.
Yeah. I left
He also says he thinks with his fingers, which I think he thinks with his fingers. I think that's it. He writes like his writing, I guess, is the point.
That's funny. Do you know Rich Antoniello by chance? So I just left a meeting with him today. I had him on the podcast earlier. Yeah. He was over at Complex. But again, he's somebody out there sometimes that through just weird synergy, sometimes I'll send him a note or a question or something, and I have no right for him to actually answer back to that. But some way, somehow, through deciding I'm just going to bully my way through and do this podcast and then getting a few people that were like, all right, what the hell, I'll do it. It's seemed to work. There's no pitch involved with it, which is typically nice. And so, again, I think most people tend to feel a little safe with that. Mm-hmm. But it's also a small, weird, small circle.
All
these people do.
It's 300 people, basically.
It is. All in this little crazy city.
I mean, in the people in the inner circle of marketing and advertising, it's really, and a lot of people switch, you know, like from agency back to brand. You know, it's 300-400 people.
You were talking about just a little while ago. And so you guys are heading back out there again, right?
It's crazy quantity of, I mean, like literally everyone makes fun of me like, oh, you got to go to Cannes now. This must be really fun. Yeah, it's fun. I guess it's fun in that I'm in France, but it's so much work. It's like an immense high-pressure situation. I'm doing 12 hot seat interviews, 12. So it's like I have to be prepared.
Back to back.
It's hard.
It's still relevant, you feel, Can?
I believe that it's getting a teeny bit smaller. I believe the creativity is always relevant. I believe that it's where right now the focus of creativity is still. So yes, but I do recognize that the just based on what I've read and what we report on, it's getting smaller, meaning the scale of it is smaller. And the largest brands are sometimes not going, and sometimes people are doing counter can programming, like where they're just, you know, some large technology companies are no way doing programming in their own city.
Almost like what Apple basically did in deciding I'm not going to do it there. Do you see that as a thing that will happen more in the U.S. that they'll, I mean, there's obviously a lot of events. You guys throw some great ones. Do you think there will be basically at some point where just enough brands will say, why are we picking up and going?
It still feels, you know, relevant to me. I still feel like it's something. I mean, scale is always an important thing.
Yep.
Do you have enough brand marketers there to make a difference? And at this point, there's still quite a lot of brand marketers that are going. It's definitely, you know,
it's evolving.
Tuning.
Yeah.
But I went to Mobile World Congress this year. We had a very large event there, and it was very, very heavily attended by global marketers. And that was a surprise for me. And so now we have to kind of switch to, okay, let's go to Mobile World. Let's do more Mobile World things. You know, CES is still huge. And, and Advertising Week in the end of September is also quite large. So we have to, like, these large tent poles for, we have to go to these things. The question is, how much coverage do we want to sort of devote to that particular event?
Talk about your own events for just a second or longer. You have the luxury to do so. How have those events changed over those last 3 years? Do you feel like at some point you've hit a tipping point? There's too many, there's too few. Are you evolving some of those around? And what do you feel like you've seen in those 3 years?
Only because I'm very cognizant of the quantity of, the hubris in the industry. It's everyone wants to be recognized. So, but I think that Ad Age needs to endlessly represent a narrow. We can't overdo it, because if you overdo it, then just everyone gets an award, and it's like soccer when you're in fourth grade. It's got to be
you get a medal and you get a medal.
It's really important that you make certain that it's about. This is the important thing. I was just on the phone with.
You can name drop. Go ahead.
I won't. I'm
gonna
stop
so close.
Myself.
So Brian, damn it!
No,
he did it.
The truth is, our events, for example, our A-list event is our very important event. That was before my time, and we added a creativity awards component to it. So we made it the A-list and creativity awards. And before my time here, it was a great party. Now it's a gala with 700 people, and it's big.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work. It's actually a 10-month process to make that event a reality. Same thing with small agency. It's a very big event, but it is the only.
Josh
the
points only. To me when he says small agency, because I have a small agency and I'm constantly, again, I'm there. I'm always making myself known.
Yes.
It's Sean Halter. Yes.
Small agencies need people like you to help them grow their business.
I guess so. I don't know.
It's the truth. And I think that the small agency is the only, it's actually effectively the only conference that is about small agencies and helping of the small agencies, because really they actually work with one another a lot better than big agencies.
Sure.
So a small agency is extraordinarily successful and growing so much. And of course, our 40 Under 40 and our Women to Watch, actually Women to Watch just came out this past Monday. And it's wonderful to celebrate the global, you know, women that are recognized, I would say, like just now hitting the sort of the front of their curve, not at the, not finishing their career kind of thing. Those events are just back to, and we did kind of create this new concept called Next. Next, we normally was a very large, you know, a 600 or 700 person event over 2 days with, you know, like 50 speakers. And what we heard from the audience and the attendees was like, we had, you know, cannabis and sports and, you know, or esports and entertainment and technology and, you know, government, all these things in one, in over a day and a half. And the request was, would you mind making this about one thing so we can go deep on a topic? So we've changed that this year with both our Inside Pages and our next series. So we just did OTT, and now we have Stack, Marketing Stack coming up, and Voice, and DTC, and all of them are, you know, are requested effectively by marketers and agencies who want to know about something. And of course, the brands who are the most relevant come to it, and the sponsors who want to be associated with that come to it as well.
Well, when you see this, I want to make sure that I preface this by saying, Josh, before I stopped over here, I was over at the Trade Desk, which is a partner of ours. We work with them pretty consistently. We have a webcast series that we're bringing out this year, and literally every topic that you just mentioned, I swear to God, I'll send you the email, are all topics that we've got coming up on that, but it's because those are really the most relevant. DTC is incredibly relevant.
Huge.
We have OTT coming up this month with them. And those are the things that really, I think, for veteran marketers to some extent, it's the part that they know they need to know. And maybe to some extent, they're just not comfortable walking down the hall and asking, you know, somebody who's maybe a rung or two underneath them, could you explain the difference between OTT and connected TV to me? Are they the same? Are they different?
Yeah, it's very true. Also, I think that that's ad age's raison d'être, if you would be so. I can use French.
Is it French? Oh my God! Here comes the kids. So what does that mean?
It's the reason.
I took 3 years of Spanish because the girls were prettier. I don't know.
It's the reason for being. It's ad age needs to be that vehicle that allows marketers and agencies and brands, whoever you are, to be like, I don't totally understand this, but if I read this article about why, why any topic.
Why OTT is the new shiny penny right now. And what's
today.
The,
And I think that technologically it's, you know, we're ever advancing. And I think that's what's really important, to have Ad Age be that vehicle that you can sort of embarrassingly raise your hand, but just do it by searching and be like, here's what's going on.
And so right now that's still still a print edition that comes out regularly, consistently. That size has it always been that size?
We've switched it. When we did the rebrand, we did make it like a quarter inch shorter on the top, and we made a teeny bit changed, but just because we wanted it to be, we heard feedback. People wanted to fit in their briefcase a little more easily. So people fold it anyway. That was important. The print piece is still extraordinarily valuable.
And so where do you see that evolving over the next 3 to 5 years? Do you feel like it will always, it just has to be a part of what it is? Is it because New York is still a city of commuters and they're still willing to grab a copy of the Post or grab a copy of Ad Age and throw it, you know, to your
they
point
are.
In whatever?
They are. It's the, I think my gut tells me that the, well, I actually know from the analytics that people, you know, almost, I think over 50% or more than that probably are reading it on a mobile platform. That's why we made our mobile platform as fast as we can so people can get the content, the articles. The print is a more of a, it's read, you know, when you're on a plane, you have the time to read the articles because that is actually there. But I think that the both of them together, the combination of the 1-2 punch is so very valuable from the information we receive, that it's very hard for me to imagine a time when it wouldn't be still in print.
Yeah.
But I'm not crazy.
Sure.
I also recognize that it's anything could change.
But
and
you
I think
guys have already been evolving around that space, that it's not that it's irrelevant if and when that time comes. To your point, you're going to con, you're doing, you know, all of this other kind of content building.
Right.
And that really is what the publication has become. It's not just
totally right.
This part is over here and this part is over here. And to put a button on the whole thing, it's part of really what's happened over those last 2 or 3 years. You've taken all the different disparate parts and you've tried to pull them in essence all altogether. I've got time for one more question, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, of course, Sean.
Well, I mean, we're in your space.
No, well, I'm giving you full permission. Yes.
What do you wish you knew more about?
Oh God. I'll be honest with you. I'm desperate. I learned coding basic. Yeah. I learned, and then I learned Pascal, and then which with a very horrible woman, which we won't go into, which was horrible to me. And now you're, of course, HTML. So I think that's three. I know three programming languages effectively, but I feel like in the next 5 years, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit from Shelley Palmer. He has proposed that in the next 5 years, knowing coding will be more important than being able to use Word or Excel as a job requirement. So I feel like, you know, so I went to my friends at General Assembly and I was like, listen, I need to learn, you know, Python
really?
Pretty fast. Because I feel like I'm inside my brain, like way in the core, like that little sort of, you know, little homunculus that lives inside your brain. It's the thing. Anyway,
you saw my eyes. Like yep, there's something living in my head, but I don't know. I don't know. Homunculus.
Homunculus. It's a little.
Homunculus.
It's a little being. I believe it was Aristotle that tried to realize.
Too smart for me,
hold on,
Josh.
Just hold on a second. Aristotle.
My dad carried Playboy in the house. We didn't even have a Bible for crying out loud.
It was Aristotle. Stick with me. Aristotle and was Aristotle? It could be Plato, but Aristotle. But he was trying to figure out what the soul was. Like what is the thing that is the you?
Yes.
So they.
The id of whatever is
inside
all the way
of you
there.
Was this homunculus that watched the theater of you living your life. That's what.
That was him banging this microphone, by the way, in his own studio.
I'm a big gesticulator.
He's excited about homunculus.
I totally forgot my point, but it was great.
Was I close to being right?
No.
I was asking about what you wanted to, you knew more about. You're telling me coding.
Coding. So I think that's the thing.
We got hung up on homunculus.
Sorry. I want to learn how to be better at what I believe will be something critical in the future so that I. Not unlike some marketers and brand people that are slightly older than myself are thinking what's a DFP and they get concerned about that. I don't want to feel that concern about coding so that I can be aware of how to use a computer and make my own app or whatever I want.
If I can extend off of that for just a second again. Josh Golden. I mean, I wish if I had that name, could you imagine if I had the name Josh Golden?
It's pretty good. I
probably
say.
Would just. I know
just
it is.
Hanging up and be like, "Yep, Josh Golden."
Yeah. I mean, I'd be the naked cowboy in New York City with a name like that. You know? Yeah.
That's
what's my
good.
Name? It's Golden. Josh Golden. I'm stuck with Sean, spelled S-E-A. I got seen my whole life, all of that kind of stuff.
I got a whole... You got this
my
start.
Homunculus isn't even... It's laughing at me. My homunculus inside is probably laughing
sorry.
At me. The
never.
The coding
never.
Thing, though, is shocking to me.
Yeah,
I think only because I feel like that's getting simpler and simpler because they're appling it
do
up
you
to
know
some
how to
extent.
Do it?
Well, no, of course not. But right. I have a couple of people that...
Ask every single generation alpha
listen,
person.
I have been begging my daughter... who is 15 now, to learn how to code. I'm begging her, and she's learning Photoshop, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, but Photoshop is good.
I'm like, Lainey, if you could just code, do you know how much money she would make as a female coder?
Yes,
I mean,
it's true.
They're hard to find.
But you have to, I'm going back to passion. You have to have a passion for it. If you don't
she does not have
dig
a passion
it,
for it,
then
I can
you're
tell
not
you
going to dig it. But I really believe that it obviously will get easier, but I believe you need to understand, there's a logic in it, there's a lot of algebra in it, but... If you can understand how to do it, you can connect that. You can smartly connect that to business, and then optimally data, and you're golden. There, oh, boom!
there's your job security. You know, publishing goes away or whatever,
yes.
And suddenly now you're coding web pages for all of the brands that you know.
that's my backup.
That's your backup plan. Did you tell me that your daughter was also, how old are your kids?
I'm at 10. My daughter's 10, a famous soccer player. My son is 11 and a famous actor.
Do you think they'll go into the business, whatever the business looks like?
I think my son might be, I don't know. I can't tell. My son, at this point, he has done some acting and he's decided.
There's still
that
a chance for tears at all. Any chance
I'm
for
working
tears?
On it. I'm working on it. I'll try to scoop what I want. He said,
my
I want to be,
I,
he loves baseball and he's been doing like some, a couple films and he said, I want to be a baseball actor. I'm like, Eli, kind of narrowing that down a little bit. It's a little. It's like I wanted to.
It's a very specific type.
It's like what's the line from
baseball
the natural
actor?
Why'd you do it, Roy? You know, from the
movie
anyway.
Quotes. It's never me. And how about your daughter?
that what she
what, yeah, what do you think she'll do? Any idea? Too young to know?
Too young right now. She's like, but she's digging sports, so she's got it. Actually, with this CMO that I was on the phone with earlier, she believes
whose name shall go unnamed. Are you afraid I'm going to use him on the show? I'll be like, well, you should have heard what Josh Golden said to me.
She was talking about how important it was to connect the sports in her young life into her business in her latter life, because it's all about the team. And I like that. And my daughter is very digging sports. And so the connection she has with her teammates is, I believe, will make her extraordinarily, whatever she'd like to do, help her to do that more successfully, for sure.
I have to feel like those of us that are in this business hope that you pass something on to your offspring to some extent.
I love the business. This is a great business.
My son is like, I'm going to be a baker. Stay away from me. I don't care about any of this other stuff. But my daughter, I think there's a chance. She's doing Photoshop. She wanted to go to Spain this year with my wife. And so I said, we'll pay if you do some work for us. So she was reluctant, nice. But she's like, okay, fine. So she's doing some Photoshop work for us. But I don't know. That's what it's all about as we get older to some extent, isn't it? Getting back or hoping that we're leaving our kids in a better place than we were. Listen, that was almost an hour. How was that, Josh?
I feel good, actually, I would say.
I had no specific agenda.
you wouldn't. By the way, Sean gave me zero questions. He was like, you'll be fine. I'm like, okay, just curious what we're going to talk about. Whatever it is. That's true.
And I feel like sometimes it's best when the conversation kind of guides where it goes. I think you gave us some great feedback, some good nuggets, hopefully along the way. Hopefully you felt like this was, again, just a good opportunity to be on the opposite side.
Yes, it is. It's funny to be on this side.
Learn what not to do as you watch Sean Halter's stumbled my way through this to some extent. Listen, if you want to find out more about Josh, it's pretty simple. Just pick up Ad Age. He's in there all the time.
Yes.
If you're in the south of France and you know French, please just head up to him and speak French to him. He'll probably know that along the way. Or stalk him on LinkedIn, or literally just stalk him at the events, because that's literally what I do now. Sometimes I feel like you see me and you kind of go, all right.
No way. Let
me just get this out of the way.
I'm hugging him out.
We're always hugging it out. Josh Golden, thank you very much for all of your hospitality. Thank you for being kind to me in allowing me to utilize you as a guest, and always being encouraging of us doing this podcast. Someday, some way, we're going to tie this damn thing into Ad Age to some extent. Whether Brian's going to let me to or not, I'm just going to start posting all of these on all of your social channels. And I'm just going to start saying brought to you by Ad Age until he finally tells me, yeah, Sean, you're not allowed to actually do that. That's probably what I'm going to do next.
Good idea. Thank you very much.
Guys, thank you so much. Listen, this is one of our last three episodes of this season. We hope that you enjoyed it. If you missed any of the episodes, please, by all means, go to thecmosuite.com. We're going to take a little bit of a summer break. We're going to bring out a different podcast called The Digital Fix. We're excited about that. We've got some great ideas to talk a little bit more about the industry itself, what's wrong with digital marketing and media, and how to kind of fix that. And then we'll be back in the fall with more episodes. And hopefully whoever that CMO was that Josh was talking about,
he'll tell
me that off the air, and we'll have them on next day. He'll be like, oh, that Josh. Of course, I told him he could say my name next time. Listen, thank you guys for listening to the show. And we'll take it out from here. Thanks.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Don't miss The Digital Fix, the podcast for digital marketing done right, this summer on iTunes and Spotify.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency, something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnects today for a free demo. Uconnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.